Hey, it's Doug here. So I was looking back through the last several episodes, especially the case study ones, which you, the fine audience, you asked for. And they're interesting because, you know, the people from the audience, like, they're not selling anything. Like, a lot of times, actually, peek behind the curtain, I get probably like 3 emails a day where someone's like, hey, I have an excellent guest for your podcast, and they've never listened to the show. Usually it's someone like promoting a book or some other thing. Like, they're just trying to get in front of y'all. And I try to protect you from these jokers out there, because a lot of times it's just like, it's not even a connection, like, subject wise with the audience. They're just like blanket sending out these pitches. So anyway, I try to stay away from those. But the cool part, folks from the audience, like, you're literally from the audience. It's people that you would meet at like Economy or a Camp Fi or, you know, out on the street or whatever. And you're like, oh, wow, you're into financial independence as well. So anyway, these are pretty fun episodes. But I looked back and basically we've been covering like Coast Fi and Slow Fi and topics like that, which it's kind of how I like ended up in this situation. I was like working on some side hustles in like the 2013 time frame, got laid off in 2015, and then was self-employed and started working online and that sort of thing. But it was all on my own terms. I was like hopefully moving towards a time when I didn't have to work, or work was optional is maybe a better way to put it. And then recently in March of 2024, my wife retired. So we're kind of moving in that direction. But the whole point is, after I've interviewed and talked to a bunch of people, including Carl, the, you know, co-host here occasionally, he was sprinting towards retirement and was kind of in a rush, and it was stressful. And he's talked about maybe he could have done it a different way and taken his time a little bit more. And I think this slow fi, this coast fi approach is better. That's really what this episode is about, is just looking at the pros. There's hardly any cons from it. Really, if you're, you know, marching towards, you know, fire and retiring early, you have options. Like, you don't actually have to retire. It's more like retiring from a corporate job or retiring from mandatory work where you have to like earn a certain amount to pay bills and cash flow and live, which is respectable, of course. But if you could reach a point where it's optional, or you don't have to earn as much money, or you can go down to part-time, that makes a lot of sense. Because usually we don't want to do nothing. We just want to have options of like when we work and the work that we do and the people that we work with and options and autonomy. So that's what we're looking at. Now, I'll tell you, I don't regret too many things, but there's a couple things that I regret. These are ads, by the way. So look at that transition. I feel really confident about that. So one thing I regret is not improving and focusing on my sleep for way too many years. When you're younger in your 20s, you know, you can go out and party and stay up late. In fact, even in college, I stayed up like too late, too often. And the thing is, if I don't sleep well, I am dumber. I'm dumber, and I'm more depressed, and I'm not in a good mood. And there were, you know, probably a couple, at least a decade of me not getting enough sleep. Ghostbed is a sponsor, and one of the best things that you can do is make sure you have a good, comfortable, high quality mattress. We personally use the Ghostbed Lux. That's the one that's a little bit softer, kind of helps me feel like I'm sleeping on a cloud. Very comfortable. One of the focuses that Ghostbed has is the cooling technology. So highly recommend checking it out. So they have many different mattresses, and I'll be honest, it can be overwhelming if there's too many options. So highly recommend you check out their 3-minute sleep quiz, and it helps you like find the right mattress for you based on, you know, your answers to those questions. They have a full range of sleeping products. They have the adjustable king split situation. I never know how to describe that, but basically, you know, two people can sleep on there. It's big, wide, it's two separate mattresses, and you could raise the feet or lower them or raise the incline. So you like set up a little higher, which is a pro tip. If you're a snorer, then if you just elevate just a little bit, it helps the snoring. So anyway, check out GhostBed out there. You can save 50% site-wide with the coupon code MileHiFi, or you can go to ghostbed.com/MileHiFi and help support the show. Really appreciate it. Oh, and one quick note, they also have 20-year warranty and 101-night at-home sleep trial. So certainly worth checking out. Thank you to GhostBed. Finally, another regret is not switching over to Mint Mobile sooner. We're saving about $1,080 per year as compared to our actually a pretty good plan that we had on one of the big carriers. I won't mention who they are, but they suck. So we moved over to Mint Mobile about a year ago, and I pay on the annual plan. We get the 5 gig per month plan, which is plenty enough for us. And my wife and I both pay $180 per year, which is crazy because we used to pay $120 per month on the old plan. So highly recommend you check out Mint Mobile. The new customers out there, if you're switching over, which is super easy to switch over. You could use your existing phone. It's $15 per month for any of their plans. They really want you to check it out, test it. And we did that initially. And then I moved it down from like the 15 gig plan to the 5 gig plan because that's all I needed. And it's about $15 per month. Coverage, nationwide, fast data. I have no issues. I love Mint Mobile. And if you want to help support the show, you can check them out. Just go to milehifi.com/mint. And now let's get to the episode. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile Hi-Fi podcast. And I have my friend Kristen Knapp joining me today. How's it going?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here with you again, my friend.
I am pumped. Today we're going to talk about Coast Fi and Slow Fi. And those two styles of Fi have been growing in popularity in the last couple of years. And I think it's a response to the fast-paced, ultra-frugal approach from the kind of first wave of bloggers. Mm-hmm. People like Carl were sprinting to early retirement, 1,500 days in his case. And after some time, many early retirees tell us that a slower approach might be healthier. Now, we have to give the disclaimer. This is entertainment. Consult your professionals. And I will point out that there's a Nectarine. It's a like fee-only advisor. You could hire people by the hour. Mile Hi-Fi is an affiliate, but it's a great way to get a little advice. Now, we're going to go over the topics of Coast Fi and Slow Fi, answer a few questions from the Facebook group, and discuss our personal experiences. So I think we may end up spending more time on that because we like to talk about ourselves a lot. I know I do. Do you, Kristen?
You know, it doesn't suck.
So, and I think Slow Fi and Coast Fi are superior because they allow you to get used to not working and build up some other hobbies if you need to, maybe build community and
free you. I think it's superior. Let me just jump in.
Yeah.
Because deprivation stinks. Who wants to sprint there and deprive yourself and live in your mom's basement and eat rice and beans? Like, that's why I think it's superior.
100%. And like a downside to working full time and, you know, eating the rice and beans and retiring as soon as possible is that you're probably working really hard and stopping cold turkey. You're going to struggle with finding purpose with all the new free time that you have. And I've talked to maybe a dozen or two people where they were depressed after they retired and they thought they were going to be much happier. So we'll get into all those details. And I think I'm going to start off just defining Coast Fi really quick. So, and I think there's maybe some moving parts to this and people may define it in a different way, but Coast Fi is reaching the point where you can, where your investments will grow enough to support your retirement at a quote traditional age without needing to continue to save. And basically you have compound interest working on your side and you can kind of slow down a little bit. And just before we hit record, Kristen, you mentioned that, you know, this traditional age, that might be a problematic word in the definition. So what thoughts do you have on that?
Well, here's the thing. So I consider myself Coast Fi because my investments are going to grow to where I need them to be when I want to retire, not at traditional age. And I'm thinking like 2028. So we're talking 4 years from now. So I almost feel like we need to create a new term. I feel like I blew past COSFI, right? If COSFI is your investments get to where they need to be at traditional retirement age, I don't know what this is, but I clearly hit COSFI.
Right. And I think like the idea of COSFI, like when I heard about it and kind of thought about it a little bit more, it was a few years ago, and it lifted some of the weight off my shoulders because I knew when I got older, there would be a lot of compound mm-hmm. interest working for me. But at the same time, like we were really aiming for like a fat FIRE situation. So it's like we hit COSFI and then we're like, okay, now we need to put money in a place where we can get to it a little easier, which is a post-tax brokerage account. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are ways to access money in pre-tax, but usually you have to jump through a few hoops. Yeah, so I think like you could hit COSFI and then layer on some other kind of FI if you wanted to, because I mean, I'm 45 and I'm like, all right, I'm not going to keep working or wait to actually get to the money. I have other money accessible.
So. Right. For me, this is what allowed me to go part-time because we were saving, maxing out all of our accounts. And I basically crunched the numbers and figured out, wait, if we never saved another dime, we're going to be where we need to be by the time we want to be there, right? So we brought all that savings way, way, way down, which has allowed me to now only work 2 days a week, which is amazing.
Okay. And how long have you been doing the 2 days a week again?
Since March. In all fairness, there are some weeks I work more. Somebody's on vacation. We have crazy weather. I actually worked like 40 hours this past week, but that doesn't happen very often. Most weeks, it's just 2 days.
Okay. And overall, from a satisfaction of life perspective, 2 days a week, is that good for you?
It's amazing. Yes. I really was afraid that I was going to have some issues with not feeling productive enough. But if you're a person that worries about that kind of stuff, that's not going to happen to you, right? Because you're thinking through all of that and planning for it. I've been staying plenty busy. And my gosh, I can't even tell you how much I love my slow mornings and getting to sleep more and the joy is incredible. Like, I'm so much happier. It's not like I was an unhappy person before, but just very happy. I don't have the stress. There were some things about my job I didn't love, and I kind of got rid of those parts by going to part-time. So I'm as happy as I've ever been. It's great. Highly recommend.
And would you say that you're kind of in a slow FI situation then? Or how do you think about it?
So slow FI is kind of is avoiding deprivation, right? Let's enjoy our life while we're still saving for the future. So I feel like with slow FI, you're still saving and investing, and I'm not really doing that. So I don't know if I feel like I can call myself that. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think you might be in the slow FI situation. However, with the moving parts of these definitions, I think it probably depends on who you talk to. So I bet some people would say, well, you should be earning a little bit more so that you can keep saving. But if you run the numbers and you've decided you don't need to save more, but you're working part-time to cover your active expenses, your cash flow, and maybe some extra vacation time or whatever you want to do, then that's cool too. It's just you're doing it in a slow way where you have flexibility. True.
Because at the end of the day, it basically means you're still working, so you're not full FI, right? But you're really enjoying your life along the way.
Would you? I think so. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
And I'm doing that.
Well, the deeper question, so if you had, let's say you had enough where you were like, I am FI, I could stop working. Would you still enjoy doing the 2 days a week? Would you do that? Or would you quit working all the way?
That's a tough question. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm going to have to see how I feel when I get there. I don't mind working the 2 days a week. I enjoy what I do most of the time. For those that don't know, I'm a broadcast meteorologist in St. Louis, but you know, my industry, it's kind of dying. There's some not so great things happening. The company that owns us actually just did some big layoffs in the last week. Fortunately, our particular station didn't get hit, but you know, over the years, they keep trying to do more with less, and pay isn't what it used to be. You're not going to believe this. I just have to put this out there because I saw this on the internet yesterday and it blew my mind. There was a guy in our broadcast meteorologist Facebook group who he posted anonymously, but he said, you know, hey, I'm in a small market. I'm doing the Monday through Friday evening newscast, but I live in a camper van without any air conditioning because they only make $13 an hour. Isn't that insane?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So these small markets don't pay you a living wage. So it's just, it's not what it used to be. So I don't know. We're going to have to see where the industry is when it comes time. We're also going to have to see, as I continue to travel more and ask off for more time, how my boss reacts to this. Because you know what? They might not give me a choice.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like so many of the different flavors of FI, they just give you more options and you could, you know, tell your boss to F off or whatever. And you can feel comfortable with it. You're like, I have leverage. Like, I don't need the job. I can do it if I want to. I'm gonna press you a little bit more. If you won the lottery, do you play the lotto?
Sometimes when it gets really, really huge, I'll get a ticket just for fun.
Yeah, about the same. It ends up being like once every 3 years or something like that. But yeah, let's say you won like $8 million.
I'm done.
Okay. Okay. I think that answers the question then. Yeah. That totally makes sense. Well, and the thing is like we have so many of these conversations and like, it does make sense to do something fulfilling, like something a little creative, but you're doing other things that you enjoy. Like in the sound check, people will hear like you have hobbies, you have some good social things that you're doing. You run the Choose FI group in the St. Louis area, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that. The FI Friends Travel website. And what do you call that entity? Is that a
what do you mean? What are my choices?
it's a company. It's a side project. A travel planning.
It's a passion project.
Passion project. So five.
I don't know. Is there okay. a technical term I'm supposed to use? I don't know. Like with tax regard and stuff. Like I don't know any of this stuff. At the end of the day, I love to travel. I love to hang out with five people. So I just combined my two favorite things, and I'm taking five people on group trips.
Cool. Yeah,
passion so there's project.
Passion project. Perfect. And the thing is, like, it's good to do something and have like a purpose. Otherwise, you'll just like flounder around through the day. But a lot of us, like people like you and I think like we would, if you were on a desert island, you would create a list of stuff that you need to do. Like, oh, we got to move the sand over here today. Mm-hmm. Let's move it back over here
we'd
another
still
day.
We'll find a way to stay busy, wouldn't we? Well, you know, and you mentioned earlier about how, you know people who rush to get to FI and then they got there and they were kind of depressed or whatever. You know, FI solves money problems, right? I think Carl actually says that. FI solves money problems, not other problems. So why people think that everything in their life is just going to be great once they hit FI doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So just know that if you think you're going to get to that magical number and everything's going to change, yeah, not so much. You need to kind of know what you're not just maybe running away from, but what you're running toward. And that's so important. And it's been great to see in the last few years in the community, people talking more about, you know, lifestyle design and things along those lines, because it's so key.
Mm-hmm. I agree with all that. Excellent points. I'm going to move on to calculating Coast FI. So just okay. as a baseline, I'm going to run through some bullet points here. So you determine your desired retirement age, which can be early or it can be traditional. So you okay. can decide like, hey, 45 is when I want to retire. Input the current invested assets into some compounding returns calculator. Use some estimated annual return, maybe from, I don't know, 5 to 10%, depending on how conservative you are and what your portfolio looks like. Consult a professional, of course. And you could use the 4% rule to figure out your, you know, annual retirement income as a baseline. Some people want to go lower. Some people want to go higher. It's beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about today. And then basically, you could kind of figure out if that meets your lifestyle needs or if you maybe need to pick up a part-time thing every now and then. And I mean, when you're coasting and let's say you have a long time horizon, we make these assumptions of whatever, 5 to 10% returns, make some assumptions around inflation, but you're going to be wrong. Like whatever you pick, you're going to be wrong. And you'll reassess it in whatever, every quarter, every year, every 5 years, 10 years, whatever. But like the farther you are out, the more incorrect you're going to be. So what do you think?
Why don't you say that? Because as a meteorologist, I can attest to the fact that no one can predict the future.
Yeah. You guys do the best you can, probably.
Right? We do the best we can. Science is getting better all the time. Hey, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. When you do these calculators and you're projecting yours, what return do you use? Because I struggle with that a little bit. I never know what I should use.
So when I was playing around just with the calculators, I would typically use around 8%. And depending on how I was feeling that day, I would like goose it up and down. And there's some calculators that you can use where you could add some variance in there. So you can say like 8% plus or minus 2, and that gives you a little bit more variation, a window. Our financial advisor uses 4.93, which is quite low. Yeah, and I'm like, well, we're probably going to be ahead of that. Well, Elizabeth is quite conservative, and that is helpful. And at the end of the day, like, I mean, we had already really save too much. So this will continue to suppress it. And I've had lively debates around like, hey, okay, like we're suppressing, we're so conservative with every assumption that we're going to be like very far off from our projection. So I have talked to a couple other advisors and many of them do use around 5% because they are conservative. Mm-hmm. They don't want you to run out of money. Right. That said, I talked to other people, they're like, I use 10%. And other people, so I would say probably 7 to 8.5% is probably like a good range.
I use 8.
8, okay.
I typically use 8, yeah.
Many of the advisors use much better software that can allow you to do a lot of other sort of cool things, projections for future spending. And, you know, some calculators can do it on the free side, but you end up compromising a little bit. So anyway, yeah, 4.93 is our annual return.
You're going to end up being the richest man in the graveyard, my friend. You've heard that expression, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm on the optimistic side. And yeah. I mean, Elizabeth is like, she's aware, like Die With Zero really impacted her and pushed her to retire. But she's like looking at the projections and she's like, okay, when do we need to start doing something? Which is the question that I asked like early on. I'm like, we're going to end up with way more than what you think. And we've had
because what happens is when you take these conservative assumptions, but you take multiple conservative assumptions and start piling them on top of each other. Now, all of a sudden, like you said, you blow way past your number.
And one tough thing, which potentially comes into the psychological things you have to think about with COSFI and SLOFI, like we have our budget. And we have our conservative assumptions. And again, like I said, we've stacked many conservative assumptions on top of each other. And we're far below, I'll tell you off air, we're far below our projected spending for this year. And we've basically done like all the stuff we wanted. But we still, like I recently, just the other day, ordered an e-bike. And they're kind of expensive. And it's like it's in the budget to like buy stuff that, you know, it's a leisurely activity, but it was still hard to pull the trigger to get it, even though we're far below our budget. Do you have an e-bike?
I don't, but I think they're super cool. When I travel, sometimes places will have e-bike tours and we usually will hop on one of those. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Have you ever done a Segway tour?
No, not a Segway tour. I was on one once. It was like a demo back in the day, like live on TV or something. I don't know. What do you think about those Segway tours? When I see people driving around on those, I don't know. I think it's kind of silly looking. That's just my opinion. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't offend anybody.
You offended me.
I'm sorry, friend.
they look fucking ridiculous.
Okay, thank you.
But we've done maybe only two. We did one in DC and one in Asheville. And it was a great way to like cover ground. And we enjoy, you know, like walking food tours and stuff like that. I don't think this one, maybe we got coffee on one of them, but like you covered a lot of ground in DC. And
but you could do that on an e-bike and look way cooler.
You could. This was long enough ago. There weren't really e-bikes. This was like 10, 15 years ago. There were probably e-bikes, but not widely available. So, but yeah, the Segways look ridiculous. But if you're able to take a tour, I would say check it out. They're pretty fun.
They're a lot of fun. I did one around kind of like the Pebble Beach area in California. There's like this scenic loop I think a lot of people have heard of. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Should we talk about the considerations and limitations of CoSFi?
Yeah.
Because, you know, lifestyle creep is one of these things that can impact your required number, which would require, you know, adjustments. I mean, how far away are you from when you think you'll become FI? And do you feel like realistically there's going to be some lifestyle creep between now and then? And if so, how do you adjust for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to like expenses overall, another area where it's just like we make some assumptions around our expenses and they might be pretty close for a couple years, but like things are going to change. Maybe inflation will hit. Maybe you move to a different area, which is much cheaper. But the lifestyle creep, I think most of the time that is a, maybe it's like a symptom of who you're hanging out with. So if everybody's buying new cars, like it kind of becomes more normal. Like around here, a lot of my friends are getting Tesla Model Ys. And I never paid that much attention, but I was like, they're pretty nice. And they're telling me it's a good deal. Of course, I have a cognitive bias to assume that that's a good idea, but they seem like cool cars. So I could see, you know, the lifestyle creep definitely happening. So I don't think I answered your question. I just said whatever I was thinking.
No, I think that's good. But hearing you talk about how you had the money and you were resistant a little bit to buy the bike and it was hard to pull the trigger, I suppose at the end of the day, I might not be so worried about that for you.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, like, we may need to have some lifestyle creep. Maybe it's through travel, right? Like, that's the one area we recently met with our advisor. And it's just like, where would we expand our spending? Because we have a lot of stuff dialed in. And it would be travel. It's one of those things where you almost have like an infinite amount of like leeway. Like you can go ultra premium or dial it back. And we've typically been on the much cheaper side, but maybe we do.
You don't have to be.
Right. And maybe it just opens it up. But it's still, there's still like a mental hurdle. Even though I have no issue spending money, there's still like something in my head. Do you have any tips?
Well, you do have an issue spending money. You're like, oh, I don't have any issue, but I have something in my head. No, my friend, you do have an issue. You have something in your head.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. There's some issue.
But it's common. It's common. But, you know, if you have it to spend, spend it because life is too short, right? Some of the other things to think about, though, you know, unexpected life events, you know, maybe something medical creeps up, market performance. We don't know what the market's going to do. But I like to think, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I like to think that, you know, for using the 4% rule, that accounts for having a couple bad years, right? If you've got a nice asset allocation, you've got cash you can pull from, things of that nature. And then unexpected life events, though, ooh, I don't know. I think you just kind of have to, honestly, for me, that's part of the reason that I'm really working on health and wellness is because I want to live as well as I can for as long as I can. And in order to do that, I've got to eat well, I've got to exercise. So I'm doing everything I can to avoid that. I don't know how to plan for it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you could only do like a reasonable amount or you end up like trying to plan for some huge catastrophe, some sort of zombie apocalypse situation. And it's just, you can't plan for that. It's just too much. But I mean, like a healthy emergency fund. And then the fact is like most of us in the FI community, our money's invested, but it's, you know, quickly liquid where we can sell some stocks. Of course, you don't want to hopefully sell in a down market, but like if there was an emergency situation, you maybe would need to go there and you could sort of self-insure in that case for certain things. But yeah, if you have the 4% rule and you're considering that or whatever, you know, 3.5 if you're more conservative, then you should be able to take care of those market downturns, unless there's like some, you know, something completely different, a major depression or something like that.
You know, the day that we're recording, 11/4, you know what tomorrow is, my friend?
Oh, yeah. It's the election.
So you want to make any predictions so then our listeners can decide whether we just really mess that one up or not by the time they listen?
Oh, I don't want to make any.
No, not. I'm sorry. Let me be specific. Not predictions on who's going to win. Prediction on how the market's going to react. Let me rephrase.
Oh, I don't know. I bet. I don't even want to guess. I was going to say, I bet it will just be a roller coaster. I bet no matter who wins, there will be like a big upturn or a downturn and then up again. So whatever it is, I think it'll swing around wildly. What about you?
I think that's a fair assumption. You know, I've been seeing all sorts of articles coming out in the last several weeks and months about, you know, how the market reacts to, you know, this party versus that party winning. And it kind of seems like it's a wash, really. So the end of the day, I'm not worried about it. I am worried about who wins. I'm not worried about how the market's going to react.
Yeah. It'll be irrational, whatever it is. All right. So let's talk about, I guess, reducing hours and transitioning to part-time. So that's exactly what you did. And we covered it pretty well is from a tactical standpoint, the light negotiation that you did and how it's actually working out pretty well. But do you have any tips for people that are like, maybe they figured out, hey, I'm in a Coastify situation. Maybe they'll leave the door open to work full-time again, but they just want to slow down. Do you have any observations over your, you know, several months of experience now?
Well, you know, one of the reasons that FI is so great is that if you're at that place where you've hit coast, then you've already got your FU money, right? So you're in a situation where you can go for it. What's the worst thing that can happen? I think a lot of people find that they go to their bosses and you hear these stories, like people want to take sabbaticals or something like that. And they go to their boss and like, I want to do this thing. And the boss is like, no. And they're like, okay, well, turning in my notice. And their boss is like, wait, we can work something out, right? So you hope that happens. And then worst case scenario, do you even want to really work there anymore? You can go find something else. That's, you've got the money, you've saved up, you're in good shape. I just feel like FI gives us the ability to make decisions from a place of power and not a place of fear. And for so much of my life, I made really dumb decisions from a place of fear, like maybe stayed in a job longer than I should have, or took a job the first thing that came along because I was too afraid or unable to be able to wait for the right thing to come along or things like that. So it's a really powerful thing. I just say, go for it. What are you waiting on? What's the worst that can happen? Really?
Do we need to hit any more definitions or strategies around the slow FI portion?
I feel like we didn't really read the definition of slow FI, and that I feel like we maybe could. Okay. Can I hop in and do that?
Go for
it. Is that okay? Oh, okay. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about SlowFi because we gave the definition, if you will, of CoastFi, but I don't think we gave a specific definition of slow. So let's do that. Similar to CoastFi, right? But it really emphasizes a more gradual and balanced approach to financial independence. It focuses on saving, investing consistently while really enjoying life along the way. And we kind of hit on that, but I just wanted to, you know, get into a more specific definition. It may involve working part-time or pursuing passion projects. Hey, there's that word again, alongside a traditional career. And it allows for more sustainable and less restrictive path to financial freedom, which brings me to something that I've thought about with SlowFi. How do you think that's different from just saving for retirement for the regular Joe? And didn't somebody ask this on the Facebook page? I think it's a really good question.
Yes. And this is from Melanie, and that's in the Facebook group. You can go to milehighfi.com/Facebook and request to join. So I think there's a couple pieces here, and I was going to give my thoughts, but I'm curious, Kristen, like, what do you think? Like, SlowFi versus regular?
I think the difference is the intention. I think the regular Joe saving for retirement isn't only not being intentional with how he spends, I think he's not being intentional about saving for retirement. I mean, what's the average American saving? Like less than 5%? So I think that's how I see the difference.
I definitely agree with that. I think the other part is early retirement. So from my perspective, like you could do slow FI and still retire 20 years ahead of time and do whatever the fuck you want after that for the another 20 years until you hit like the traditional retirement age. And it gives you the flexibility to stop working if you want to, but it also doesn't put the stress on you of like optimizing every financial decision, working overtime as much as you can, and just like earning as much as you can as quickly as you can. I think that kind of pressure is very stressful. So if you remove that, you can still retire early. So I think that's the main difference, like slow FI or maybe slow FIRE, because I am interested in the early retirement portion, or at least not working a traditional job anymore, which people get into a lot of debate about, like, should you stop working? Like, do you have to stop working? And I'm like, it doesn't really matter. It's just, you could do whatever you want. It's just, you don't have to get a job that you don't want to have, basically.
Right.
The other part is around, and I think you touched on it, it's just like the lifestyle design portion, where if you have a hobby or you want to volunteer for, you know, something in your community, you have like way more time to do that, because maybe you're working, you know, a traditional job, but you're only doing it part-time, maybe 2 days a week, for example, or 3 days a week. Right. And then you could volunteer at the Humane Society for, which you do, right?
I do. I volunteer in the kennel enrichment program at the Humane Society here in St. Louis, and I love it so much.
And you pet dogs?
Basically. Okay. Yeah. I get to go into the kennels with them one-on-one and love on them and give them treats and tell them they're good boys and girls and work on their commands. The idea is to make them more sociable and thus more adoptable.
That's cool. Yeah. Elizabeth, she volunteered for a couple years just walking the dogs at the Humane Society around here. So pretty fun. Dogs are awesome. So
They need us.
Okay. So anything else about like the difference between slow FI or regular Joe FI?
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. It is a good question though, because I've thought about that too. I'm like, well, if you're just taking your time getting there, then how is that any different than anybody else? But yeah, I think for me, I think a lot of it comes down to the intention, because the average Joe isn't spending intentionally, right? I mean, they're not really, I don't think anyway, spending based on their values. We're mostly spending to keep up with the Joneses, unfortunately, which it sounds like you're doing a little bit of. What's the deal with this Tesla thing, mister?
Oh, probably.
You're probably not a keeping up with the Joneses type.
No. I think eventually when I need to get a new car, but my truck's like, I was thinking about it, it's like 19 years old now.
Oh, look, here's the deal. At the end of the day, though, like if it brings you joy, if you love that car, go get that car.
Yeah. I'm not a huge car person, though. So yeah, it'll be me more neither. Utility. And the thing is, you know, when you buy a new one, it's like that first scratch, you know, it sucks. So I like getting one. I like to get a lightly used whatever, just right. So it has a first scratch. But let's see. Anything else with slow FI before we hit more Facebook questions?
No, let's hit more questions.
This one is from David. So I have a question around COSFI. When someone says they have saved enough to retire at a certain age in the future, does the sequence of returns risk from that moment hit them harder or softer? Retirees can reduce their spending to help themselves in the first few years of retirement if the market turns down. But if you're drawing no money, I guess I don't understand if that makes it safer or more risky. So I was thinking about this, and I believe I'm right. I believe I'm right.
Okay, because this one kind of hurts my brain, so I'm going to lean on you for this one.
So I think overall, it is a softer impact, but basically, like the sequence of returns does not impact you until you start withdrawing. So my thought is, especially like if you're thinking COSFI is 15 years plus out, again, your assumptions are going to be pretty off it will have compounded and grown quite a bit. But basically, like, the sequence of returns doesn't hit you unless you're drawing down in a down market. So if you're not drawing down, then it shouldn't impact you. However, if you have the money growing, then you will know if you're over or under whatever you estimated, like 15 or 20 or 30 years ago or whatever. So you'll know if you're in a position where you don't need to care about the sequence of returns, or if you do need to care about the sequence of returns and take it easy the first couple of years. So based on what I said, do you have any, does that make sense to you? Does it pass?
Yeah, it does. But like, tell me if I'm wrong here, because my thought process is, if I have 10% of my portfolio in cash, once I pull the trigger on FI, right? Then that's like 3 years of living expenses. So if I can use that cash to live off of for the first 3 years, in case we have a down market in the first couple of years, right? Bad sequence of return risk. Then at the end of the day, it's not an issue, right? So if I have a good asset allocation, maybe say, I don't know, 70-20-10 or 60-30-10 or something like that, as long as you've got 10% in cash, is there even a sequence of return risk at all?
Yeah, you're right. Basically, if you don't have to withdraw, then yeah.
So just protect yourself from that, right? Put 10% of your portfolio in cash. I'd be curious. There are going to be people who probably say this is a really bad idea. I don't know. I chime in the comments, because I want to know if I'm wrong so I can fix this.
Yeah. No, you have it. I think you have it right. If you have a bucket of money that you could access instead of selling your assets, then yeah, the sequence of returns don't matter. So,
right.
And it is fairly common to have whatever, more cash on hand than like you really need, just in case there's a 3 year long recession, which I think that's the average length.
So I think it's two. I think the average bear market's 2 years.
So as long as you're paying attention, you wouldn't have to withdraw anything. So hence the sequence of returns don't matter. So yeah.
I have a very simple plan, and I'm going to tell you what it is, and you can tell me if you think this is right. I kind of already alluded it to it, but the idea would be to do, like, you know, 60 to 70 in equity, 20 to 30 in fixed income, and then around 10% in cash. And then every year on some random day of my choosing, maybe I pick my birthday or something, I just readjust or do the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Rebalance.
Thank you. Getting a little bit older, sometimes I lose words. Rebalance, yes. Because that way it forces you to do the thing you're supposed to do, right? Which is buy low and sell high. And then you're always replenishing your cash bucket. So for me, in my brain, I feel like that should work perfectly. And then in a bad case scenario, if the market is down, then I just don't maybe rebalance for a while and just kind of live off that cash for a little bit longer. I don't know. What do you think? Does that sound like a good plan?
That seems like a good plan to me. And there's some pros and cons, right? But or opinions. So I know, like, someone like Carl, he says they've oversaved, right? So they have what they need. So he's like, I'll just keep it all in like equities. That gives a maximum return. And because we've oversaved, like, we can weather the ups and downs. Elizabeth, my wife, is more conservative. She recently just rebalanced to a 60-40. Because she's just like more conservative. I am less conservative. I'm in the middle. There's a spectrum here. And I'm like a 90-10 or so. And quick note. So Elizabeth is the 60-40 with her investments, but she does hold a decent amount of cash, maybe like 8% or something like that. So it's like pretty sizable amount of cash. But to your point, like, it could weather a market downturn for a few years, which is good. And I mentioned our investments are separate, but like, when we push them together, again, it's somewhere in the middle with a little bit more bond allocation than what I would want and a little bit less than what she has. So the blend of the two works out pretty well. But to your point, I think the cash buffer is great. And I've heard some people say, I think they spend from the cash bucket, like there's an auto withdrawal into their checking account from the cash bucket. So it comes from there. So they don't feel like the money they're spending, they're not like selling stock and then spending it directly. And that way, like, you could rebalance properly. So, yep. Yeah, you got it. And there's some psychological component too, but it does keep you from selling and potentially in a down market because you have the cash on hand. Now, if you run a simulation or something, like one of them may really do better in returns, but most of us have probably been conservative and we've saved a little bit more than we need. So we can weather some, you know, less than optimal returns.
Yeah. Again, it comes back to, I feel like if you're worried about it, you're probably fine, right? Because you've thought through all the things that could happen and done, put things in place to prevent that, because that's just who we are as a community.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing, you know, we're talking about working part-time, or we have a lot of flexibility on certain portions of our expenses. So travel, for example, that's one where, like, we'll still take vacations, but maybe we won't go on a Christmas river cruise that particular year, but we would.
Or maybe just one of you goes.
Just one goes. Yeah, yeah. It's a hypothetical. But yeah, maybe that year we don't go on like a more expensive trip and we do something a little bit closer to home that's a little bit cheaper. So.
Okay. Since you mentioned the river cruise, I'm going to jump in real quick here.
Yeah.
So we talked about it last time. I launched Five Friends Travel. It's a way for the Five community to see the world together, right? I love hanging out with the community. I love to travel. I just combined my two favorite things into my passion project. So since we last spoke, I launched a trip to Portugal, which is coming up in April. And as of today, November 4th, I've got 6 spots left. So if you want to learn more about that, just go to fivefriendstravel.com. You can sign up there and subscribe to the newsletter, which I'll launch new trips. You'll get all that information, not miss anything. There's also a European river cruise to the Christmas markets, as you just mentioned, for December of next year. And then sometime between now and the end of the year, I'm hoping to get out a trip to Morocco, which I'm aiming to be in October of next year. So love hanging out with the Five peeps, love traveling, would love to have you along. So check it out. You can always email me as well. You can send me a note through the website and ask me any questions or just say hi.
What should people expect on one of the trips? So I know some of them have like some events have like a lot more programming, but what about yours?
So I am purposefully not going to plan any programming because we're there to travel, right? I know that when five people get together, those conversations are going to happen naturally anyway. For these land-based trips, there's going to be plenty of time driving around from site to site, and you know those conversations are going to happen. I don't see any reason to take away time from us seeing some of the most amazing things in the world to specifically have these discussions. So no programming, just five people who enjoy hanging out together, traveling the world together, and having these amazing experiences and building memories. That's it.
Cool. So this is a point that I want to cover a little bit here, and we could talk through it. So for SlowFi, how do you decide if a lifestyle upgrade like working fewer hours is worth potentially delaying full financial independence? So, I mean, this is exactly the thing that you went through, right? Because if you kept working full time, you would be earning more. So how did you weigh the pros and the cons and arrive at your decision?
A couple of things. My husband doesn't want to retire until 2028, and I know we're going to be at our number by then. So that kind of played into my decision and made it a little bit easier for me to go part-time now because he's still working full-time and that helps float some of my expenses. So that was an easy decision. I think as far as making that decision for anybody else, you know, that's tough. You just have to figure out, what do you value more? I mean, for me at this point in my life, I mean, I'd had some things happen, right? I lost some friends. I've reached now the age that my mother got her cancer diagnosis that ultimately took her life in the next year. And I realized that time is so important and I'm not gaining any at this point in my life, right? So to me, having autonomy over my time and being able to do more of the things that I want to do now, as opposed to waiting, won that battle really easy. So I think it just requires some soul searching as to what's more important.
Did you have any doubt along the way or right after you trimmed your hours?
Zero doubt. Once it was clear to me that I did the math that we were fine, like, done. No concerns whatsoever.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, it totally makes sense to me. And Elizabeth is super happy since she stopped working too. I was a little nervous she would get a little, not bored, but like, hey, I should get a job, but she.
That's awesome.
No. Yeah. She's like, this is the best decision ever. So.
Because she's not quite as, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but she's not quite as into this spy stuff as you are. Is that fair?
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah. She's not.
Okay. So for a person who's not really into it to be willing to retire early, like that's impressive. Yeah. That doesn't really happen a lot outside of the FI community.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is she has a lot of friends who are in the FI community, but I think like some of the conversations we're having, it's just like, she doesn't care to have them as much anymore. Like we would, you know, just her and I, but it's a little bit different. The framing's a little bit different. So she's into it. It's like, she just doesn't want to join the cult in the same way. Yeah. But she goes
funny story about that. My husband always jokes. He's like, well, first of all, he thinks when I go to Longmont, I'm never coming home and that you guys are going to put me in charge of the chickens. If we all live on some hippie commune or something.
Yeah, that is the goal. So you like chickens?
Goodness. Yeah.
No, okay.
Yeah, maybe I'll do the potatoes. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
All right. So I think we covered like most of the questions that we have in here to our liking. So I wonder, like, Kristen, do you have advice for, let's say you could give advice to your 25 or 30-year-old self? Like with what you know now, and take a few minutes to think about it, because it sounds like all those sighs tell me you have a lot of stuff to say.
Well, one of the things that I struggle with, I didn't really have a mentor. Like, and it kind of makes me mad almost that like no adult stepped in and gave me some better advice. But I try to do that now for some of the younger people, because I didn't have that. So I wish somebody would have said to me, oh, you need to apply for all these scholarships. You definitely don't want any student loan debt. That's one of the things. The other thing is I wish someone would have impressed upon me, and this is kind of controversial, because I know with choosing a career, it's important to do what you love, but at the same time, it's also important to do something where you make good money. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. And I struggled at least until like age 30. It was really hard. And looking back on it, I do wonder if it would have been wiser to find another path that I knew would pay a little bit more, and trying to figure out that return on investment of my degree and what the job was going to pay. Growing up in poverty, like I was just the idea of having a full-time job and being able to pay for rent was great at that point. But now where I am looking back, like I still struggled a lot for a long time. So I do wonder if I would have, I don't know, maybe have gone into the medical field or something like that. It'd be something sciencey, but something that paid a bit more, because that's been a challenge.
Got it. I'll answer for myself too. When I asked you and you were like, I thought I don't even have an answer to that question. But I think like overall, I didn't really enjoy my career. I learned a decent amount, but I picked a good degree. Computer engineering, like pretty good degree. I was able to get a good job, roughly high paying, especially for my skill level as an employee.
So you were in the opposite situation of me then. Yeah, you're making good money. Don't love your job. I love my job. I'm not making good money. Like, I don't know what the answer is.
There's some trade-off. And like over time, I got out of the climbing the corporate ladder situation, which wasn't really working for me. But I think all of it was fine, because I had good experience and I did learn a lot. I worked with smarter people than me, so I learned a ton. But just from our FI perspective, just I didn't invest as well as I could have. I did a couple things right early on with like maxing out IRA, 401ks for a couple years. Like, foundation was awesome. Virtually no student loan debt. And I still have the same truck that I got like a couple years after I got a job, right? So those worked out pretty well, but like I didn't invest as well, especially in say the 2008 to 2012 period, around that time. Cause I mean, it was, the market was kind of flat. So I put a lot of money in and I'm like, man, this is like flat for a little while. And I should, and I dialed back and I should have been putting like as much as I could have afforded, which was a lot more than I did put in. So at the end of the day, like I just would have ended up being able to retire and having the FI money probably a few years sooner, maybe 3 or 4 years sooner. I'm not sure.
Okay. I thought of two more while you were talking.
Yeah.
I wish J.L. Collins would have written his book, The Simple Path to Wealth, a little bit earlier, and I would have been gifted it as a college graduate. And I also wish somebody would have impressed upon me a little bit harder how bad credit card debt is, and that if you can't afford to pay cash for it, you can't afford it. Those are the other two.
Are you willing to share like how much credit card debt you had, Max?
Honestly, I wish I could remember. I mean, I don't think it was ever more than maybe $15,000, but I mean, that's still a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, and then you combine student loan debt on top of that. Okay. And I mean, I just was in a situation in my 20s where I had low limits on the cards, right? Because you're young, you don't make a lot of money. And like I had multiple cards and every single one of them were maxed out. And this was just to live. I mean, this was just to pay for gas and food. I mean, it wasn't like I was living this extravagant life. But by the time I paid rent, student loans, and car payments, there just wasn't anything left. So what would happen is every month I could only afford to pay the minimums, which I always did. But then it was like, ooh, I've got $30 before I max out on this one. So can you put my groceries? Can you do 30 here and 20 here? And it was ridiculous. Robbing Peter to pay Paul, right? That's how I spent my 20s.
And then when were you debt free? At some point you were like, okay, I got to stop this, right?
I found the Dave Ramsey book, Total Money Makeover, and learned about what he calls the debt snowball in early 2000s, and immediately started working that debt snowball. So I started aggressively trying to pay that debt down, and it took me till, let me think. Wait, is that right? 2010 is when I finally hit zero. 2010 okay. is when I was finally broke and out of debt. That wasn't that long ago.
No. Well, it's cool to hear. I mean, because the thing is, like, it took us, you know, both of us a little while to like be moving in the right direction and all that stuff. But still, I mean, the point is, it's like 14 years ago, you were able to like pull things together. And now you're like, I'm part-time. Coast Five, like you're doing what you want. Yeah. So, you know, thinking back, obviously we can't change our lives. I think we're happy with our lives where they are, but it's like, if someone's young, you know, I have a question we're going to hit in a couple weeks here on one of the episodes. And she is 27. And I'm like, you're fine.
You're
like,
good.
You're 27. And like her position is where I was when I was like 38 or something. So I'm like, yeah, you're totally fine. Like you could tweak a couple things here, but like if you just stay the course for like a few more years, you're going to be totally fine and kind of be able to do whatever you want and have full options. Anyway, I can't remember if I had a point.
That's okay. I was just going to chime in and say, yeah, I would say it took me about 5 to 10 years working really hard to get out from under the debt. And then once I got to zero and was able to throw all that money that I was putting toward the debt, toward my investments, then it took roughly 14 years to get to this place where I'm able to go part-time and I see FI kind of right around the corner.
And last couple questions here. I know we got to wrap up. Growing up or even as a young professional, did you see anyone that went part-time and just-
No.
Like, okay.
Like outside of FI land, that's not a thing. It had never occurred to me in a million years. When I went to my boss to talk about it, he was shocked. I think he thought I was going to quit. And he didn't really know what to do with me. I mean, he approved it. He thought it was a great idea, but like they'd never had anybody do that before. They didn't know what to do with my benefits. They didn't know if I needed a new contract. It was pretty much unheard of. So yeah, I just don't think, particularly as a childless woman, right? I don't have any kids of my own. Like, well, why is she going part-time? It's not like she's staying home taking care of the kids, right? Like, what's she doing that for? You know what I'm doing it for? Because I can and because I want to.
Yeah. Yeah. So my parents were a little bit different. So my dad was a firefighter and my mom was a nurse. My dad retired when he was like 49 because he had his 30 years in. He started when he was 18-ish and there was some whatever deferred comp and some other stuff, and he has a pension. And yeah, he retired early, and it was, I mean, he's enjoyed it. There's always plenty of stuff to do. So there's plenty of stuff to do. And then my mom, she's a nurse, or was a nurse. She went part-time, I think, around the same time. So, and she went up and down the number of hours and stuff like that. But yeah, she did go part-time. So I didn't even realize it, but I had examples of like early retirement and then slow fi, like in the household, but I didn't put
it together. Do you recognize though, like what an anomaly that is, that your family did that?
I do. Yeah, I do. And I mean, I was in college when my dad retired, and I thought, oh man, I don't want to be a firefighter, but I sure would like to retire early. And I was like, oh, that's impossible. And I never, the thing is, like, if I would have Googled it, I could have found a couple books. Pete wasn't blogging yet. There may have been some of the early iterations. Maybe Get Rich Slowly could have been around those early days. But yeah, I didn't put it together until, yeah, whatever, a few years ago, really. Mm-hmm. Even though it was right. I mean, I had like clear examples of like what you could do. The thing is, like, I thought I couldn't do it because my dad had a pension, and that's like not a thing anymore.
Right. So, right. My dad worked until the day he died. I mean, retirement, like, what's that? You know, that was my life.
Interesting. All right. So we're starting to wrap up here. Do you have any other thoughts on the slow or coast fi that we need to talk about here?
Other than, I think you can take pieces of each one to combine for a really amazing life, right? Like, let's avoid deprivation. Let's live our best life along the journey, but let's be smart about it, right? And I think we're all, how blessed are we all to have found this community and like these things so that we can live this incredible life that, I mean, just look around. Most people aren't going to get to live this life that we are. It's just, it's the best thing ever. I just love all my community. You guys are the best.
I love what you said, because I think, you know, people can be rigid on like the specific five that they're aiming for, but really, if you could pick the best parts that work for you from any one of the flavors, then that's great. Maybe you do a mini retirement in your slow five for a few years. You may find a different career, especially if you're on the younger side, then you might find something that you really want to do, but you don't have to earn as much money. And maybe it's more of a passion project that grows, but then you have total freedom to do it. And then you could go back, work full time, whatever you want to do. It just gives you options, right? So
there's so many options, you know, it's just like you're free to choose the path that works the best for you. And we're all going to be in amazing shape at the end. So it's pretty great.
Kristen, so you have Five Friends Travel. Where should people find you, and where do you want me to direct them
to? Well, how about, the website, fivefriendstravel.com, and then you can email me at kristen@fivefriendstravel.com. And if you're in St. Louis, you can find me on KMOV Television.
All right. Or if you're passing through and then want to hook up with a Choose FI group.
Oh my gosh, I would love that. If you're coming through St. Louis, definitely give me a shout, and we'll get together. I'll show you around my fair city.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks, Kristen. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. took some cooking classes, and I love cooking. We chatted about that. What have you been cooking lately? Is there anything where you're like, I want to practice this dish or use this technique? Anything in the last few weeks that you've cooked?
So to be clear, I am not fancy. The main purpose of me taking that class was just to get a little bit more efficient on the basics, how to be a little bit more optimal in my vegetable chopping and such. But when I make recipes, I like to have something with as few ingredients as possible that I can cook as quickly as possible. So I made a really great pepper steak yesterday. That was really yummy. I've been making this like chicken and mango stir fry dish that I really like. I have a shakshuka. Do you know what a shakshuka is?
I don't.
It's kind of like an egg white omelet, but it's got a little spice. I think it's a Middle Eastern word because of maybe the spices involved. I could be totally wrong, but I feel like it's served in like Moroccan dishes or something like that, but it's got some tomatoes in it and egg whites. It's really yummy. I'll actually eat that for dinner.
Okay, nice. And so you took a few classes, improved your knife skills. How's your finger? Is it better now?
Oh, it's good. I got my stitches out. It's still like the tip of my finger still feels a little weird because of the nerve endings. They said that'll take a while, but I'm functional now. I can do all the things again.
All right. That's good. Yeah. The stitches.
My Frankenfinger. We talked about that last time. I sliced it open.
It's horrific. I was like, it's pretty yucky. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see it's better. And then are you taking any more cooking or food classes coming up, or you took a few and you're settled for now?
I'm kind of good on that. I did take a pottery class on the wheel, but I quit after the first one.
Why didn't you like that one?
I just didn't enjoy it. Here's the thing. Like, I know in my heart that I'm not sporty and I'm not artsy. And for some reason, I think now, you know, that I'm older, maybe something's different. So I did the same thing with pickleball. I went to some pickleball clinics and I was like, well, maybe if I just give it a few more weeks. I gave it a few more weeks. I'm like, no, I'm not sporty. I'm never going to be sporty. Same thing with the pottery. It's just not my jam.
Okay. Yeah. It's mud too, right? Like you get all dirty and stuff.
It's a mess. It's hard. Plus, what's the point? I'm going to make more stuff. Like, I don't even want more stuff. Like, I'm getting rid of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. So you're not sporty. You tested some stuff. What activities are you doing more of now where you're like, this is me?
You know, I spend a lot of time Phi community stuff, right? I run the Choose Phi St. Louis group. We do like two events a month. So I'm spending a lot of time doing that. And I actually spend a lot of time with those people outside of group too, because they've just become my good friends. I'm spending a lot of time cooking. We talked about that. I'm spending a lot of time in the gym lifting heavy weights. Maybe you won't recognize me by the next time you see me. We'll see.
Nice.
and then, you know, I love doing like travel planning and travel hacking, credit card hacking, if you know what that is. So yeah, I read a lot more. That's it.
Okay, good. It's all fun stuff. And little sneak peek, we will be doing an episode coming up soon on travel hacking and credit card rewards and that whole world, which I don't participate in too much. So
I have not paid for a flight at this point in like probably 9 years.
Wow.
I know. It's amazing. And I go a lot of places.
Yeah, you do.